Good morning, world. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And as we announced a week ago, we are happily into 2012. And we're going to be snowed in here for a while in Pittsburgh. But we think fondly of the wonderful sunny days we spent over Christmas in Madrid. So to start off with now, tell us.
A real expert on Madrid who confessed that he first went there in 1968.
And he loved it.
Many people would not even confess they were born in 1968 these days, but we picked Jerry Dore's brain before we set off, and we picked his brain again so that we'd have even more to report about what you can expect if you decide to follow in our footsteps. So here's Jerry.
Jerry Dawes, quite an honor, and it's certainly a tribute to how much you know about and how much time you've spent in Spain, that you even have menus at restaurants named after you.
Well, one.
So, but Jerry Dawes, you are a travel person, a writer. You have books out, several, actually, that I can think of.
Well, I actually only read guidebooks for Penguin and Berlitz, much to my shame. I should have half a dozen books out by now, but I'm hoping this year that I'm going to be able to get one off the ground, but we'll see.
Great. And so when did you start going to Spain? It's been, what, 40 years?
1968. I arrived today in 1968.
Wow. So that's amazing.
So you've been absorbing everything Spanish since then?
Well, I fell in love with Spain from the air. I arrived at dawn on 68, and I saw below, because I was Navy, I was coming from my assignment in Rota in southern Spain, and I saw bull rings and cherry vineyards below me before I ever landed. And I had to wait a week for the indoctrination course before I get off the base. But I was already in love with the country before I got there.
But you had been in southern Spain already in the service?
No, I'd never been anywhere outside of the United States. But as soon as I landed, I knew I was home.
Now, Spain has changed enormously since then, right? Because
I've kept pace with a lot of people who went there in the 70s and then they don't come back for 30 years, and they seem to be very disappointed, as if they wanted the Spaniards to be frozen in time so they could be in some living perpetual museum of poverty. And while it was fun coming up through all that stuff, it wasn't so much fun for the Spaniards sometimes living under Francisco Franco and digging their way out of a huge economic hole all the way up.
No, a couple of amazing things have happened, I think, since then, haven't they? First of all, the restoration of a constitutional monarchy and a democracy, and a huge injection of resources from the European community and from people who helped fund the Olympics in Barcelona, which brought Spain from being one of the more backward countries of the European Union to one of the most progressive. And
well, when you stop to consider the fact that the Spanish genius and art and everything else was always there, they just needed to be free and have an economic incentive. And I've always thought what happened was they just started to work like hell to catch up with the rest of Europe. And when they did, they got into a rhythm where they were working so hard that some people in Northern Europe might not have been pushing as hard as they were. And that's one of the reasons they blew by France, frankly, in gastronomy with Ferran Adrià and all those people. And they would have blown by further if France didn't control the Michelin guide.
I have two interesting observations from just about Spain generally, and then we'll focus in on Madrid, because that's really what the subject is of this particular program. But the thing that struck me the most from the first time we went to Spain, which is more than 10 years ago, was the roads were very good and the bathrooms were even better. And
that was a big upgrade, especially the bathrooms. The roads are always fairly decently paved, except some really, really out-of-the-way places. But those superhighways, I used to have more fun before the superhighways, because you had to discover all these villages, but it took a long time to get places, which is the way you should accomplish travel, really.
Now, I want to touch on one other thing of a general nature, because before we go on, again, specifically to Madrid, because you have to be living on another planet not to know that Spain is one of the pigs of the European Union zone, Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain, all being economically and financially very troubled right now. The interesting thing is that aside from one observation in one of our interviews, we did not really hear anything about. We saw lots of people about. It was Christmas time. Everybody was having a wonderful time. So you wouldn't have been able to guess.
Well, there's 20% unemployment, and then I have to laugh when CBS says the Occupy movement, who would have thought it in September? It's started in down in Battery, down in the tip of Manhattan, in the park down by Wall Street, and it spread around the rest of the world like hell it did. I was at the Ignatos rallies that were camping out in the Plaza de Catalunya in Barcelona and the Puerta del Sol in Madrid way back in June and May. And you know, I'm all for Occupy Wall Street, but it did not start there. It started elsewhere. It started in Arab countries, it started in Europe, and it spread. And the idea that it started in New York and spread to the rest of the world is just not true.
Well, now, you actually brought up an interesting subject. You start talking about the different provinces of Spain, and that's another major difference, the whatever they're called, the independent provinces. But what we're talking mainly is about Madrid, which is, it's the capital of Spain, and it's very different from some of the other places that we've talked about, like Barcelona or about the Basque Country. You know about these things. How would you characterize Madrid as a travel destination? And before you actually answer that, I just wanted to mention that you handle planning trips for people and showing them all the back roads and how to get around.
I do sort of private consulting, customized trips from anywhere from two people to half a dozen people to 20 people max. So I plan a trip, I discuss it with them, I do the whole thing. It's not cheap, but they get incredible experiences because they're not going through the country itself and seeing buildings and this, that, and the other, and just eating in a restaurant here or visiting a winery here. They're interacting with the people because I take them to places and I know these people all over the country. And so we
you sure do.
Chefs and people like all kinds of people from around the country, and you actually interact with them. So it's not like they're going through a Madame Tussauds museum where everything's made out of wax or a stuffed animal museum or something like that. They're real people populating the places that I take them, and they actually have names that they can identify with and everything else. And so it's very, very memorable. Becomes very, very cool with camaraderie. And it's easy to get a hold of me. My name is Jerry Dawes, G-E-R-R-Y-D-A-W-E-S. Just Google me and you'll find my website. So my Insider's Guide to Spain, Spanish wine, food, travel.
Now, Madrid. How does Madrid rank in terms of, I know you're sort of in love with Barcelona, aren't you?
Madrid is my town, city in the world, even more than New York. Madrid is not as spectacular as Barcelona. And San Sebastian is very small, 160,000 people, but it's spectacularly beautiful. Not in that way, but Madrid has a soul and a kind of core to it. Also, you have to understand all these other places, including San Sebastian and Barcelona, a lot of other cities in Santiago de Compostela, they're all much older than Madrid. Madrid was a Moorish village, and it was sort of close to the center of the country. In the 16th century, they made it the capital of Madrid. So that explains part of it. Like, I've had a Jewish friend one time, an acquaintance, said to me, well, they're trying to hide their Jewish heritage. I couldn't find a Jewish quarter in Madrid. The reason I couldn't find a Jewish quarter in Madrid is Madrid was not really cranked up as a town or a city until after the expulsion order. That's why.
Okay.
Go to Toledo. You want to find,
right,
find
exactly
great,
yeah,
Jewish stuff in Toledo and a lot of other places that I know.
Well, now, how would you sell a trip to Madrid to somebody saying what's great about Madrid?
Well, if I were customizing a trip, it'd be my base to start around the country and possibly come back there to some place just outside Madrid before we catch the plane. But if you're going, just somebody's going there to eat and have fun, keep in mind what's going on now. If you use Madrid as a base, you can get a hotel in Madrid now, and you can be in Segovia in 35 minutes on a rocket train, the AVE. You can be in Valladolid in 45 minutes, so you can go up there and come back in a day. You can actually go to Valencia and come back in a day if you wanted to. You can go to Sevilla, you can go to Cordoba, you can go to lots of other places. It's better when you go that far down, even though it's an hour and 45 minutes, but you could go visit Cordoba for the day. You could go visit Sevilla for the day. You could go visit Valencia, and Barcelona's 2 hours and 45 minutes. This is by train, not having to go to an airport and do all that.
Yeah, that's the bullet train or whatever it's called.
And, of course, there are all kinds of day trips out there, Chinchon, which is marvelous, and Toledo, Aranjuez, and all those places.
Yeah, you got my email saying that we had discovered Chinchon and had eaten at the restaurant with your friends.
La Balconada. Yeah. I love that place. Chinchon can be a little touristy, but don't go on Sunday when all the Domingueros, the Sunday
Well, we went.
People are out there.
We went a long time ago, actually. Now, how about you mentioned staying in Madrid? Do you have any tips on hotels?
Hotels in Madrid. It all depends on your budget, of course.
Right.
My thing about towns like that, or even Barcelona, or whatever, the best inexpensive thing you can find, unless I'm doing a tour and it's a high level tour, then we'll stay here and there. But I just got back on it from a trip in October when I took Chef Michael Chiarello around Spain.
Oh, you took Michael? Yeah, I know him. He's a friend.
Yeah, I had a great time. But I took him and his chef at Bottega, and we went. His chef and I went 4,000 kilometers, and Michael was with us for 2,500. He was with us for 9 days, and we were out for 13 days or 14 days, something like that. But anyway, we stayed in a place that I've stayed for years now since it opened. It's almost like a businessman's hotel, but it's got a little bit more to it than that. The Lope de Vega, which is right in front of the Prado on Lope de Vega Street. It couldn't be more convenient and right around the corner from the Palace Hotel. Now, if I'm invited or if I'm on a tour or something, I'd love to stay in the Palace. I've stayed in the Urban. I've stayed in a whole bunch of hotels. It depends on where it is. But when it comes to spending my own money, $300, $400, $500 a night for a hotel, I can't and would not and don't do it unless I was just filthy rich. Because
we don't do it either.
Yeah, I'm seldom in the hotel that long. So you need comfort. You need a hot shower, which everybody's got now. You got comfortable beds. They got nice, firm beds. You need air conditioning, and you need quiet. So get a reasonably priced hotel. Most of them are good now. Days back wasn't always the story, but that's long behind us. And enjoy the city without getting the pocketbook hit so hard.
Yeah, well, we stayed one where Peter got in the shower. It was not a cheap hotel. Got totally soaked down in the water. They turned the water off.
Now, hold on just a second. Our hotel, seven nights, was under $1,000.
Where did you stay?
We stayed at one of the AC hotels, which just recently did a deal with Marriott. And so all of a sudden there are six other hotels you can reserve in Madrid that you used not to be able to get under the Marriott Frequent Flyer program, which we use as a guide, but we did, as you accurately said, because I told you that the first time we were in Madrid, we stayed at the Palace, and we thought it was a wonderful, luxurious experience.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to sort of drill down a little bit, since we spent 8 days in Spain altogether, and all eight of them were in Madrid. We did something a little bit different than the touring you're suggesting. We could certainly have done that, but since it was around the Christmas holiday period, that wasn't the best time in the world to do that. But let's not forget some of the wonderful treats there are in Madrid itself. It's the Gran Via is not Gaudi, but it sure is magnificent architecture of a period. One building next to the other one.
Madrid is, that's a trip just to be in, to me, that I go to, like when I stay in that Hotel Lope de Vega. You got the Prado, and if I'm there for more than a day or two, I try to go to the Prado because there are places I like to revisit. Flemish painters, I like to revisit Goya and Velázquez especially, and people, you know, those great paintings and stuff like that.
Oh, it's a fabulous. This is the first time that we've been there since they did the expansion, and it's really just, they pull all kinds of things out now from storage. It's really magnificent.
The Prado is a phenomenal place, and you can spend your life there. Luis Melendez with the still lives. It's fun to go through still lives of food for different periods.
Yes.
And find out what they were actually eating back then.
And it was all
symbolic.
Tomatoes
really
too,
showed up, and they were used as food earlier than some people think. Seem to think they did. But that's the Prado. But then I walk up through the Barrio de las Letras, which is where Lope de Vega and Cervantes lived. Lope de Vega being a Spanish Shakespeare, and statues to Lorca in the Plaza de Santa Ana, and tiles, and Cesena, the Cape Shop, and you walk down to the Plaza Mayor, and all of it's a bit of what the tourists do, but I don't give a damn. The reason the tourists do it is because it's a fantastic thing to do. It's a fantastic place, fantastic architecture, and incredible ambiance, and I just never get tired of it. Going through the Plaza Mayor, going down the Cava Baja, Cuchilleros, those streets, now the Mercado de San Miguel is going, I think probably went there, did you not?
Yeah.
We were a little disappointed in the Mercado San Miguel and the Mercado San Antón. Let's just briefly say that the Mercado de San Miguel is open and looks fine, but it's really all prepared food and not very interesting.
That's not so. I'm sorry. I'm going to beg to disagree with you. That it's a food court and it's privately owned.
Okay, it's a food court.
It's not a municipal market.
No, I didn't say it was a municipal market. I'm sorry. We were at odds with each other there.
The cheese shop there is incredible. And Ham Shop Moss is one from Barcelona. There's seafood places. and it is jam-packed. The wine bar is good. I mean, if it's not, you know, little old store down here, me or this or that, and the best of the best of the best, not all of it certainly is, but it is a hell of a lot of fun, and you can stand there at that bar and eat a Carabinero for €9 instead of paying 20 a piece for you to sit down in a restaurant. You just don't want to go on a crowded weekend night because it's just nuts city.
You told me something that I found interesting about, because I had expressed my disappointment in the big markets, like compared to Valencia, which was fabulous, or Barcelona, for example. But you said that if you go and there are all these little shops, and they sort of all come together as a market.
There are places in the neighborhoods, like over over a little northwest of Retiro, off of O'Donnell, where my friend shops, and there'll be this great ham and embutido shop, and around the corner is a great fish shop, and the bacalao shop is across the street, and this thing is here, and that thing is here, and you could pick up a lot of, do all this shopping and stop different places, and there'll be tapas bars in between, and that's a lot of fun as well. A average person, you know, when you're there shopping in markets per se, you're doing it because you're going to be cooking or something. Most of the time when you go into markets, you're there to look at the stuff when you're in a hotel and stuff, because you're going to be taking it home and cooking. I was staying with friends in Barcelona once when I went down and did something I always wanted to do, was shop for the meal in the Boqueria. So I got all the stuff in the Boqueria and brought it home. But markets are for people who live there. And the other thing, when you were talking, it occurred to me, it's very a very American thing to say, well, it's not as good as the one in Valencia, Barcelona. Those are incredible places, monumental places. Boqueria is one of my favorite places on the planet.
Me too.
But I also like to go to a dinky little market in Dania where they have these three women cooking, and it's not for everybody. And they got a little of this here and a little of that there, and it's really not a very special market downtown there in that respect, but it's got ambiance. And then there's a whole German section over here because there are a lot of Germans who vacation. And then, of course, there are markets all over the country. Everybody goes to La Brecha and San Sebastian, but where all the chefs mostly go to shop is at San Martin, which is just a few blocks away.
Nice.
And in Santiago de Compostela, they've got a marvelous market, just absolutely terrific. So it depends, you know, what you're up for.
Well, now if you're up for window shopping, we can't afford to spend dollars after all to buy all these expensive goods. We did spend a lot of time on the Cali Serrano and the Cali Jorge Juan and the Cali Goya.
Like shopping Madison Avenue.
And there were the most remarkable thing, and you undoubtedly must have seen this, is the lighting on the streets. The lighting is just wonderful.
I mean, I'm not there as often during the holidays because very, very seldom, because don't have occasion to. Expensive as hell. Hotels are booked and things like that. They're not events that I'm going to be attending that are around that time because they're over or they're getting ready to start. Like Madrid Fusion, the third week in January. I'll be going over there for that around the 20th, I think. And I miss it sometimes being there during the holidays because the Plaza Mayor is full of stand selling Christmas stuff. And
oh, yeah, that's
Barcelona,
awful stuff.
Same thing, you know,
Rome's the same way. It's the Piazza Navona.
Got a terrific ambiance. And then a little bit going on in the food. Madrid is also a place where, some way like New York or any other big city, a lot of times people who live there all the time are looking for something new, and the new restaurants open and stuff like that. But I really like to be able to go back to a place and find the places, the Toda la Vida, the places that have been there for a while and going to be there for a while, and not all of them would rate on the ultimate gastronome scale, like Botín, for instance, the oldest continually operated restaurant in the world. But in the summertime or in warmer weather in the season, I go there sometimes at 11 o'clock at night, and I'll have just have a bowl of gazpacho on a glass of rosé or something. And sometimes I've taken people like Terrence Brennan there just to have the pig because it's so colorful, it's so ambiance filled, and you can pull out the sun also rises and read the last pages where they wrote about it, you know.
Right.
It's one of the first places I went to, and I've been going there for 40 years, so why am I going
to
stop?
Well, we're going to introduce in this program and the next program, we're going to introduce five restaurants, all of which we talked with you about. So let's exclude those because they'll introduce themselves one at a time, and you know which ones they are anyway. But what are some of the other places that people shouldn't miss? Via Valais is one that we were going to go to, and we didn't, and you said that was really a place we should have gone.
Well, Via Valais, keep in mind, too, that I think when it comes to fancy restaurants, You can find them in New York and Pittsburgh and L.A. and San Francisco and all over the place in Madrid. And, of course, you'll want to go the one if it's special. But when I'm in another country, I want to go to the places that reflect the cuisines of those countries. In some cases in Spain, modern Spanish cuisine sometimes reflects that, sometimes it didn't. You know, Japanese noodles and all kinds of Ferran Adrià techniques and stuff like that. It becomes an international cuisine, and it doesn't appeal to me, except for the professional aspects of it, as much as the real down-home stuff does. So if you're flush enough, you'll want to go to at least one great marisqueria like Cambaro and have shellfish, because shellfish in Spain is absolutely sublime. Carbineros, scarlet prawns, and stuff like that.
Oh, I love those.
Paco Ron, the chef owner of Villa Valet, has got a really wonderful by-the-glass wine selection. You can see in buckets there in the front where what they've got, including Godellos, which is the great white hope for white wine in the world, not just Spain, in my estimation. It's from Galicia. But anyway, he has marvelous tapas there. There's one behind the Retiro Park that I love to go to, but I love to go in the back of the place and sit down and sort of have a meal back there. It's called La Castella. And I really love to wander along those streets, which some people say, well, it's been done, it's touristy and stuff, but those streets that emanate off the Plaza Mayor and where I've stayed many times. You can even have a good tapas in places like La Taberna de Alabardero, which has outposts in Washington and in other places in
Marbella.
There's a very good chef in there, and there's actually some very good food to sit down to. And also, I think it's a place of discovery. If you really got a nose for things, you can go in and stick your nose in the place and have a look at it and more or less intuit whether it's going to be decent or not. And there's just one after another of those places. Sometimes I still go into places where the food is not particularly good in this one, Cerveza Real Amana, but because of the ambiance, I'll maybe have a beer and a bite of Russian potato salad or something. go to the original Las Bravas place and have patatas bravas with the original sauce with a glass of rosé.
Well, that's great, Jerry.
Jerry, let us come with you next time you go.
And we did have a wonderful time, and let's have you echo the fact that Madrid isn't just a place you can tour from, although it's really good for that. It's a place where you can spend some quality time, and we did that too. And I just want to close with one thing, because you didn't mention the wonderful collection at the Thyssen Bornemisza, and the only thing I could say after leaving there to Anne was, it seemed totally outrageous that one man should own all this art.
Well, that kind of sums up a lot of things going on in the world. You're exactly right. I guess if you're going to own that kind of stuff, the best thing you could do is put up something like the Thyssen Bornemisza so that people can enjoy it. And that's great. Why anybody should be allowed to accumulate that much is beyond me. But that's the way things are now, but won't be much longer in this world.
But fortunately, he gave it away anyway. So.
Well, that's a good thing to do if you're going to accumulate that much. Why there aren't controls in place to keep people from doing it beyond me, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, but they will hear it before it's over because people are fed up with this kind of stuff.
I should think so. Especially
in this country.
I think so.
Well, Jerry, we're on a downward spiral right now worrying about the condition of the world, so it's probably a good time to hang up. But thank you so much for your contribution to us and on the menu today.
Oh, it was a joy. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And we'll be back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and our next stop is we explained it pretty well in the interview, so let's just go directly to talking to the general manager of Sula. We keep raving about every meal that we've had in Madrid, but this one has certainly been very special. We're very pleased, after eating way too much that we should have, to be able to talk to the general manager of a restaurant called Sula, and we're talking to Sergio Martinez at Charte. Is that good?
It's perfect.
Sergio, First of all, tell us what Sula
means. Well, Sula means it's sophisticated, unique, in Spanish, alegre, happy. It's like every letter that the name has, it means something. And
it's Sula, an acronym.
Yeah, and Sula is very, very, it's easy to recognize the name. Like Sula likes to women. They like, they find out like very sexy, like very sophisticated, and it's easy to remember. It's short and nice.
Now somebody told me it was meant a little fish, but
yes, of course.
What kind of
fish? I was
going
to say that. It's a special fish that you can find out, or you can find in South America, and then it has some jelly that they use to keep the pearls. Or to give some shine to the pearls.
Now, this is a large structure. It does not feel large because it is also intimate, and you have very well-trained serving staff. First floor is mainly tapas?
Yes, it is. It's a bar with a private room of 12, 14 people with a screen for like companies which want to make some meetings. And then we also have another room, also like informal room to mix tapas or menu for the restaurant. So we can have old people, kind of young people, the people who eat in the bar. And then upstairs we have the restaurant.
And we had this wonderful multi-course meal in the restaurant. And before we describe that, I think that it's fairly important to understand the character and the concept of Sula, for you to describe to us the three owners, because they each kind of molded a part of the restaurant menu and operation to them. Who are the three owners?
Well, the three owners are José Gómez Joselito from Joselito. They are well known for his ham, considered the best ham in the world. We also have some kind of meats. Another owner is Cayo Martínez from La Catedral de Navarra. He provides us vegetables from Navarra. And then another owner is Quique da Costa, is one of the best chefs in the world.
Yes, we know Quique as well. You threw this off, like the Joselito, as being one of the best. I can tell you, I've probably eaten every ham in the world, and as far as I'm concerned, this is the best I've ever eaten.
It is, yeah.
What makes it so different? And well, you told me something funny, but tell me all of it, all of it, and then we'll tell what was funny.
There are many things which make this ham special. Or it's like I told you, Joselito plays music for the porks. So they are
they
like
play classical music.
Classical music, yeah. So
it's, but you don't know what?
No.
See, we need
because
to find
I've never
out.
Been there. I know it, and I know people who has listened to that music, but I've never been there. I know it's like classical music.
I bet it's not Stravinsky or Mahler.
Definitely not Mahler.
You said it might be Mozart.
Well, maybe.
Or Strauss, maybe.
I'm sure that Joselito always plays the best music or the music that he likes.
Does he sort of pipe this out into the fields? Because these pigs run wild, right?
Yes, they are wild.
They're free range.
Yeah. It's a big landscape or space where they can run or so they can move a lot, and that's very important for the pork. Because if they don't move, they get stuck. They don't create fat. And the one of the most important things for the ham is to mix the red part of the ham with the fat, good fat. In this case that we're talking Joselito, they have, this pork has good fat. It's very important to say that it's good for cholesterol.
That's hard to believe, but it's true.
It's hard to believe it, but there are 8 universities in Spain and Portugal which say that Joselito's fat is good for cholesterol. And there are some doctors who recommend to eat Joselito every day, just for diet or something. Just a small piece. You cannot eat a leg.
No.
A small piece.
Well, I mean, we ate way too much.
It's very healthy. It's very healthy.
Yeah, yes. But we ate way too much for our cholesterol.
So we ate a week's portion, so we're going to have to eat something else for the rest of our time.
But, you know, you served us the actual different cuts so we could taste it.
Yeah.
And then chorizo was fabulous.
Yeah, you had chorizo. It's there are people who say that they prefer chorizo than jamón, but I think jamón is very, very special. You
yeah,
ate
I like
ham,
jamón.
You ate loin, you ate sausage and chorizo. We have we serve it here in Sula with a special bread. It's called pan de cristal. Glass because it doesn't have taste, it's not salty, and then you are eating ham, special ham, and it's like crispy.
Yeah, we noticed that a guest at the next table from us, a group of three people,
yeah,
had a plate all of ham and they ate every little piece.
Well, yeah. So did we.
Yeah, we did too. But well, we always do that.
So, no, but the menu, you have a little bit from each one of your owners.
Yep.
And so when we got to the Navarra, we had some wonderful vegetables. It's something that Spain does probably better than anybody I know, which is actually they jar preserve. We had artichokes, leeks.
Yeah. Asparagus.
Asparagus.
Baby habitas. Yeah.
Habitas is much
green beans.
Beans. But they're all preserved. Or jarred, as I would say, in a very special way.
Yeah, this is very special. And these are all from Navarra. That's very important to say, because here in Spain, there are companies buy product this product in different countries. But we here in Sula, and with La Catedral de Navarra, we just have products from Navarra. And then they keep the flavor touch. When you put this artichoke or the asparagus in your mouth, it's completely different. These companies also, Joselito and La Catedral de Navarra, are like 80 years, or they were founded 80 years ago, so they know what they are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think they do.
Yeah.
It's very good stuff.
It's,
and then you do have some more experimental dishes from your other owner, Kiki da Costa. You said we had some of those. I don't remember which those
piquillo
were.
Piquillo platter with pork belly. It's a special piquillo pepper. Piquillo
pepper. That was good, yes.
But this is not the red one. It's a special. There are few peppers like this per year, and we are very lucky to have them because of one of the owners is from. He can send this kind of pepper. It's three colors of pepper. It's
okay, red and green.
Red, green, and a little bit orange.
Orange or yellow.
And it's very special flavor, and we mix it with Iberian pork belly, Joselito. So you mix the flavors, and it's completely different to every other pepper or any other pepper that you can eat. It's a dish from Kike, and we use the products. The special produce that we have from Joselito and La Catedral de Navarra. So we have all the owners together in the same dish.
Well, now, who comes here? We had upstairs here at the restaurant, we had business people that never seemed they were ever going to leave. This is a business lunch?
Yes, it's a place for business lunch and also for dinner. We received in 2007 an award from La Comunidad de Madrid for the decoration and the environment of the restaurant and for the design. And at night, there are many young people, like cool people, people from Madrid or who come here to have a special or informal dinner with this view to the street.
It's a cool street.
Yeah.
Cool street.
It's really cool street.
I mean, you do more business at night.
In the morning.
When do you do the most business?
The most business on weekends and every night. But lunch business.
Lunch.
We usually, not now in Christmas, but Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are the days that we work the most.
So the smart thing to do, and we should plug this in right here, is it's a good idea to make a reservation in advance.
Yes.
And you can do that online, Sergio?
Yeah, you can do it online and or by phone. But it's always recommend, we also always recommend to make the reservation before you came, because sometimes, well, actually, I came with some of my friends from the north of Spain 2 weeks ago. It was on Saturday night, and I didn't have table. I had to wait on the bar, and then after, people finished the dinner, I could sit down and have my dinner.
Because I think that maybe they might have done that on purpose.
Yeah, maybe.
maybe they were teaching you a lesson.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This is a really delightful intersection. It's Calle Velázquez and Calle Jorge Juan.
Yeah, Calle Jorge Juan. It's near to Velázquez.
My pronunciation is really good.
Yeah, Serrano. Retiro, Parque El Retiro.
So it's a
Colón Square.
It's a delightful spot to come in Madrid, on the edge of Salamanca, I guess is how you would describe it. And business lunch next to us finished at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it was 5 minutes ago.
We're still, of course, doing our business right now.
So, maybe some of them, our business customers who have lunch, they finish the lunch here in the restaurant and they go downstairs to the bar. They drink some gins or some whiskey, or because we don't close. We open at 12 o'clock in the morning and we close at 12 o'clock at night.
So Which is very unusual for Madrid.
So the tapas continues.
Yeah.
Now, what about the sit-down restaurant? Does that...
We close...
You close that.
Open at 8:30.
Well, you know, I mean, you're so enthusiastic about the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I mean, you studied hospitality, and this is what you want to do with your life, right?
Well, I studied business, and this is a company. And the people who work here, they teach me every day hospitality and the way to speak with people and to be with people. Because to work in a restaurant, it's really hard. And you can speak with 100 people every day. It's not a company that they call by phone and then you talk and all that. So it's different.
But you like it?
I like it. It's very funny. I can meet people like you, these young and sexy people.
Oh, you're too funny.
No.
How many languages do you speak?
Well, I speak Spanish and I try to speak English.
Okay.
You're doing fine. Now, you yourself, you're not from Madrid. You're from another part of Spain.
Yeah, I'm from the north. I was born in Pamplona and I ran this year for my first time.
You didn't?
I did. I fall down, but I did. I was there.
Yeah, you weren't hurt.
You ran pretty fast. You're okay.
Well, yeah, that's why.
Listeners, this man is okay. He didn't have any serious consequences.
Yeah, I have my legs with a big pain during 2 weeks because I started to run and then someone fall down and then I was just behind him. Uh-huh. So I fall down also.
See, I never understood that. I mean, we've had friends who've run. I just don't understand. I would hate that.
Really? It was my first time. I tried to do it before, but I couldn't. And my father ran till he was 45 years old.
Really?
Yeah, during all his
life. So it's a tradition in your family.
It's kind of tradition, but my brothers haven't run yet, and I've been the first one to. Yeah, once I told my, I finished, and I called my mother, and I said, Mama, I ran today.
And she said?
And she was like, it's better to, don't tell me this, even if it's after this moment that, and you are safe, just don't tell me this because you are able to do it again. And I don't want to have that kind of nervous every morning. Now maybe my son is there.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
But I live in Logroño. I used to live in Logroño. It's
Logroño.
Kind
of, yeah. Logroño. Logroño is Rioja. He's going towards Rioja.
Yeah.
Beautiful wine country. Now, we had some lovely
wine. Yeah, I was going to say, you recap the wine rabbit, because it was wonderful.
It's a great wine list, but the most interesting thing is, because the focus is on foods from Navarre, there's also a focus on wines from Navarre, which on Navarra, to be more accurate, and we had the opportunity about 3 years ago to taste a whole lot of wines from Navarre in New York City at a very special program. So it was a delight to be able to say to whoever, I can't remember the name of the person
today,
who served us.
Jose?
No, the wine person.
Alberto.
I said to Alberto, I said, we should drink wines from Navarre. And of course, he was very pleased with that idea. And we had a delightful Chardonnay and another red wine, a very masculine red wine.
Yeah. Beautifully.
There was an interesting wine on the list I did not get to ask him about. If I read it correctly, it was a white wine made from a grape called Petit Verdot.
Yeah.
And I had never heard of anybody making a white wine from Petit Verdot before. Most of us who know about wine think of Petit Verdot as a red wine used for blending in Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And we've seen it as a pure grape variety produced in California, but never as a white wine. So things are happening in Spanish wine, and I think, along with the wonderful meal you'll have here, the smart thing to do would be to say, please help me to understand which wine from Navarre will go best with my lunch. That's certainly what we felt.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed both of the wines that we had.
You did.
Okay, now website. What is your website?
It's three W's.
www.sula.es.
S-U-L-A dot E-S.
E-S for Espana. And we just said...
You can find everything over there. We also have some pictures from the events or parties that we have made here in Spain, in Sula, as Joselito's events with Ferran Adrià, with some of the most important journalists in Spain.
Yeah, and if you want a last little tip, listeners, those of you who have been not buried under a stone watching Spanish cuisine will know the name Ferran Adrià. And Ferran came here for a special event.
Yeah.
He likes this.
Yeah. He likes this really well.
Yeah, they
He's
like.
A spokesperson
well, actually, in 2008, it was a magazine which asked some of the, or four of the most important chefs in Spain, as Ferran Adrià, Arzak, Martín Berasategui. And Ferran Adrià said that his favorite restaurant out of Barcelona and the rest of Spain was Sula. You can find that article on the website.
It's fabulous.
And so there's a little bit of a hint, but on the menu we'll endorse that completely and say...
Except my heart's broken that I have to leave this.
We don't close.
So we can always come back.
It's going to be a very expensive ham if I have to fly over from the United States.
We only have 2 days left to come back, but maybe we'll be.
Yeah, and the ham we have here in Sula is a special ham because it's 48 months cured. It's 12 months more than others.
Absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, it is considered the best ham in the world. It the best national product in the last 9 or 10 years.
Sergio, thank you so much for your welcome and for your contribution on the menu. It was a delight to be here.
It has been a pleasure for us to have people like you here who have enjoyed this food or this meal.
You can tell we have enjoyed.
You have enjoyed. Okay, that's our best. We always open to have people like you here in Sula. So you're very welcome for next time.
Muchas gracias.
It has been a pleasure.
And don't go away, because we'll be right.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and we're going from a brand spanking new, 5-year-old or 6-year-old restaurant to a restaurant that's been around for quite a while and has a little story that there was a restaurant that dominated even before it started. And I don't think we went over this in the interview, although we did find out about it because La Tasquita del Enfrente.
Oh, right.
You might say, well, it means sort of exactly what it sounds. It means in front of La Tasquita. And the founder of La Tasquita del Enfrente was actually, I think, the general manager of a restaurant called La Tasquita across the street, till he decided to open up his new place of his own.
Now, his father owned the original.
No, this is the guy who founded it.
Oh, okay.
The current owner and the chef didn't start out in the restaurant business at all, we discovered. In fact, he was in the corporate world in the insurance business, but 15 years ago decided to take over the business from his father, and it's a really enchanting establishment in an old, out-of-the-way part of Madrid. It's hard to find, but you'll find it, because there are all kinds of clues on their website. So here's the chef and a translator from La Tasquita del Enfrente.
You know, there are places you could go where you could have a really wonderful meal experience, and then there are places you could go where you could have a really wonderful social experience, and of course we've just had combination of both of these at La Tasquita de Enfrente, of course in Madrid, because that's where we are, and we're going to be talking to the owner chef of this restaurant, Juan José López Bedmar, and we're going to have assistance, and actually he assisted us through the whole meal, but he's also going to help us translate, which is Juan Antonio, which is really his main name, Antonio Perez. Thank you both for making a really wonderful experience. Now, let's step back a little bit. This restaurant is very well known in Madrid, but the history goes back a long way because Juan José, you're called Juanjo? Yes. Your father had a restaurant for how many years? 55 years across the street?
Sí, mi padre fundó el restaurante hace 35 años.
Juanjo's father started with a restaurant 35 years ago.
But you didn't really become a chef and restaurateur right away. You went into business, right?
Sí, yo estuve 22 años dedicado al mundo del seguro, trabajando en empresas.
Juanjo worked for 22 years in insurance company.
Oh, no!
Yes. Y llevo 13 años de chef en el restaurante.
And now he's 13 years in like as a chef in the restaurant.
He doesn't look that old, I'm afraid. You're not that old, I can tell.
Yes.
You could, if you want to know why there are all these neckties framed all around the restaurant, it's to reflect your corporate experience, which you want to remember. We all want to forget because you're doing so well now. We can look around and see all your neckties that have been disassembled and framed. But what we really notice is the food. How would you describe the food at your restaurant?
Yo fundamentalmente lo que busco es el producto en el restaurante. Y la función fundamental mía es la búsqueda de ese producto. Tengo una red de proveedores por toda la península y diariamente
the fundamental of the restaurant of the cuisine here is the fresh food. It's in relation with the market, and Juanjo has a strong net, you know, with different places in Spain that provides us all the best product in Spain, you know, like fresh seafood, fresh meat, the best vegetables, you know. It's like, and Juanjo is looking for the best products all around Spain, even from France or different countries.
How does the kitchen handle these products? What style is the cooking?
Tratas.
Es una cocina mediterránea y un estilo muy propio. Adaptamos el producto para que sufra lo menos posible.
It's a Mediterranean style, and we are very, very careful with the essence of the product, because the product is the more important thing, not the way that you cook. You know, it's like to focus on the quality of the product, and we combine with the best way with different with the food and even with the menu. Tasting menu is this and harmonize, you know, in the menu, in the tasting menu.
Would you call this style of your kitchen traditional Madrid, Madrileño?
No necesariamente. Es una cocina mediterránea global. No es española, no es madrileña, es universal.
It's not a local cuisine, it's more in Mediterranean cuisine, but more in the universal sense of the term. More Mediterranean, not only in Spain, not focused in Spain, with, you know, like in different countries like Italy, France, or even different influence, for example.
Puedes encontrar platos de origen peruano, de origen italiano, de origen francés, adaptados con la materia prima que encuentra.
It's interesting to be sitting here where we are in the special section of the dining area reserved for special guests, but looking across to the wall, I can see Juanjo with Joel Robichon and with Pierre Gagnier and with Ferran Adrià. So these perhaps are your heroes. How much influence have they had on the way that you cook?
Son buena gente con la que he compartido muchas experiencias, congresos, pero realmente la influencia fundamental es la influencia de mi madre y de mi abuela.
It's the stronger influences of his mother, of his grandmother, more than other partners, other mates, that Juan José said that he shared with the chefs different experience, but the stronger influence is of his mother and his grandmother.
Eso y viajar mucho por todo el mundo.
And also traveling all around the world.
Now, perhaps the best way to explain the kitchen here is let's talk about some of these dishes. I will always remember the first platter with the anchovy. Tell us about that.
About specifically the anchovies or about the...
The first dish we had.
La anchoa es un producto muy difícil. Primero porque ha estado muchos años sin poder ser cogida. Por lo tanto, obtener anchoa hoy en día y poderla comer como lo habéis hecho vosotros, pues ya es un lujo entero.
It's very difficult to find good anchovy because there was forbidden to fish during some years, and it's very difficult to have this quality of anchovy, and it's like a luxury to get this special quality of anchovy.
I mean, it's the best anchovy I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, it was. It could.
Sí, es. Es realmente es un producto que tengo fijación con él y me da mucho placer trabajarlo. Igual que las verduras o igual que alguno de los productos que os habéis tomado. Para mí cada día es especial.
Concept that is very special, the chubby, but it's also special fresh food like vegetables and other products that have in Tasquito. But Juanjo is looking also, always for the best quality and to maintain all the quality along the years in the restaurant.
Now you have some fun with your menu because you gave us a tartare. Like, a.k.a. a steak tartare, but there wasn't any steak in it, and you had a guess. That's fun. And what did we discover?
Sí. Ese es uno de los platos últimos, y lo descubrimos, pues, dándole al tomate, a la carne de tomate, el tratamiento de la carne normal. Y lo que hicimos fue alinearlo como si fuera un tartar. Y hemos obtenido, como ha dicho, un plato muy divertido.
It's one of the last dishes, and it's like a joke because we put the same process with the meat, with the tomato. It's a special tomato, and it is the same sauce, and it's very funny and special for this place because you have to guess and it's like you sometimes you confuse the meat with the tomato meat with meat or with fish, and it's very funny.
We need to discuss one other dish. Is the one that Peter was totally enamored of was the scallop. Explain the scallop dish.
Bueno, la zamburiña es un plato tradicional gallego y también se toma mucho en Francia. Y lo que hemos hecho ha sido adaptar una salsa típica francesa con un vino típico español que es el Pedro Ximénez.
It's a traditional seafood in Galicia, but it's also traditional seafood in France. What we mix the Galician and French influence and with the Spanish, matisse, with the Malaga Virgen, with the Pedro Ximénez traditional wine, and it's like with the butter and with the onion, we put this wine and is the mix. As I told you before, that is the interesting mix between this scallop, the wine, and the fresh onion.
Well, we could go on with explaining all 14 or 15 courses, but I wanted to also mention we have wonderful wines, and you do a large wine bar business too, do you not?
Sí, tenemos una bodega bastante grande y fundamentalmente de champagnes. Tenemos aproximadamente 100 referencias de champagnes y el que os hemos puesto hoy es de un pequeño productor. Últimamente nos encantan los champagnes de pequeños productores y solemos acompañarlos con los distintos platos que ponemos.
We have a huge catalog, especially with champagne. We have more than 100 references of champagne, and also with wines, and try to harmonize with the different dishes, the correct wine, champagne. This is one of the best things of Tasquito, because we have a huge catalog of different wines. Of different regions, on different countries also. And also the champagne we tried is Michel Gonnet. It's a small producer in France. We like this kind of producers because they take care a lot about the process and the quality is also, it's also very high and very stable quality.
Well, now we also encountered some really interesting people. Both of them were foodies. One was a chef sitting at the bar with us. Who else comes here? I mean, this is a fun place.
Últimamente viene gente de muchas partes. Vienen ingleses, franceses, americanos, mexicanos. Pero el núcleo fuerte de la Tasquita son amigos, son clientes de toda la vida.
The most important are our customers for the whole life, you know, like the 13 years coming to Tasquita and growing up with us. But there are also, especially in the last times, different people from Europe and from the States, you know, and there's a lot of references on the internet about us and different guys, and so there is now this is changed, but the main group is our customers of 10 years or.
Well, I mean, this is.
Like our fan also, as you said before, they are fans of Tasquita.
Well, this is a fun, welcoming place with really interesting food. Not only is it good, but it's also interesting because you do your own personal take on all this.
Thank you very much.
And anything else you'd like to say?
Nada, agradeceros vuestra presencia e invitar a todo el que nos oiga que venga a la Tasquita, que no se os olvide dar la dirección, que es Ballesta 6 in Madrid.
Thanks so much to be here, and we welcome to everybody who likes to come to Tasquita, that is in Calle Ballesta number 6 in the downtown of Madrid. Thank you so much.
Gracias, Ted.
Thank you very much.
And if it sounds like we're having a good time.
We always have a good time.
We were. It was really fascinating to be at La Tasquita de la Enfrente, and sitting next to us at the special counter for VIP guests, I guess as they call it, even though it's right in the front of the restaurant, was the chef from Astrid and Gaston, part of a worldwide chain based in Peru that opened just a short time ago in Madrid. They have restaurants all over the place. If you ever have a chance to go to one, if you can send us a report as to what it's like, we'd certainly be interested in hearing about it. And it turned out that the young Peruvian gentleman who was the chef there had met his uncle, who's from New York.
Right.
Although obviously originally Spanish, and an architect specialized.
Originally Peruvian.
No, the chef was Peruvian. Was the guy in New York? Was he Peruvian too?
No, he was Peruvian too.
Oh, he was Peruvian too, although he lived in New York and he was visiting Madrid. So you never know who you're going to meet.
It's a wide, wide world.
You pick
a, but it's a small world.
But it's a small one. Piccolo Mondo or whatever it is in Spanish. Do you know what it is in Spanish?
No.
Well, anyway, we'll be back to the small world of Madrid again next week. So we'll see you again. Same time, same place.
Bye-bye.